Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Canty here with Amber Wilson, who's filling in for Mike Golic Jr. Gojo on the coverage for the College Football Playoff National Championship game tonight in Indy. And we're going to take you right up to that coverage, which is beginning at 7 p.m. Canty and Golic Jr. is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. And Amber, the road ahead for the Giants seems like it's got Joe Judge in the driver's seat right now. And that's got to be one of those things that's concerning for Giants fans all over the country. But it's also got some Giants players that are up in arms. I just received a text message from one of my former teammates, Dave Tollefson, who's a two-time Super Bowl winning champ with the New York Giants. He won Super Bowl 42 and Super Bowl 46. But he's duck hunting in Arkansas, but had the time to shoot me a text because he's listening to the show. And he says, the Giants need to give Judge a plane ticket and a sack lunch. And when he says a plane ticket, he's talking about one of them bootleg airlines, and it's not first class. He needs to be sitting in the back of coach next to the bathroom. But that's how Giants players feel, former Giants players feel about Joe Judge continuing to be the next head coach. We'll have more to chat on that with Jordan Renan, ESPN New York Giants beat reporter in 415. But right now, we got to bring on Tyler Fulgham, ESPN sports betting analyst, to try to get your pockets right for the College Football Playoff National Championship game. And Tyler, glad to have you on the show today. I got to ask you, Alabama is getting 2.5 points in tonight's game. Now, Alabama and Georgia hooked up about a month ago with Bryce Young elevating his team to victory in that game. Where do you lean in terms of the value with this point spread in tonight's game?
Yeah, Amber, Chris, for me, the value is on Alabama. I mean, this is Nick Saban and Bryce Young, we're talking about the Heisman Trophy winner and the greatest college football coach of all time. I know Georgia has been good this season, but their only loss, the only time they've looked pedestrian, was against this Alabama team. Nick Saban, going back to 2008, it's 2008, 13 years, there has been 6 instances where he has been a betting underdog at kickoff. That's it. 6 times his team was expected to lose, quote unquote, in the market. And he won 5 of those games outright. He's 5-1 since 2008 as a betting underdog. If you look at his last 3 instances, he's been a betting underdog. It was the 2009 SEC title game against Florida. It was a 2015 regular season game against Georgia. And, of course, it was this year's 2020 SEC title game. Those last 3 instances, dating back to 2009, Saban won all 3 games outright. And he did not just win them outright. He won the 2009 SEC title game by 19. He beat Georgia in Athens in that 2015 SEC regular season game by 28. And, of course, we just saw him win as a 6-point underdog the SEC championship game by 17 points. So I'm sorry, with my hard-earned money, I can't go against a trend that is that compelling. I know there are legitimate concerns on Alabama's side. No John Mechie, some banged-up players in the secondary. But it's still, at its core, Nick Saban and Bryce Young, and they're catching points. Give me the 2.5. I'll play Bama on the money line. I think they win this game outright. That is what history has shown me Nick Saban will do in this spot. He is going to feed all kinds of yummy rat poison throughout this week to his team. And I love when Saban can legitimately claim no one believes in us and get his guys ready to go to war.
So let's simplify things here, Tyler. Let's talk money line. Bet the Alabama money line plus 115. What should we be doing with that?
Yeah, I like that. I think I wish it was a little bit higher. I wish this got up to plus 3 and that money line was like plus 120, plus 125. But if you have the stomach to just bet Bama outright, I would play that rather than the 2.5 points and just get a better return on your investment. At plus 115, that means a $100 rager will return your $100 if Alabama wins, plus an extra 115 to go into your pocket. So I just like that, considering my belief that it is more likely than not that Alabama wins this game. I just think the wrong team is favored. Maybe that blows up in my face. I know a lot of smart money and sharp money is on Georgia, and I understand why. In a matter of, 28 days, you're getting an extra 3.5 to 4 points of value on this Georgia-Alabama matchup. But I do think matchups make everything in football, and Alabama will match up appropriately like they did in the SEC title game and win this game. So give me Bama on the money line.
Talking with ESPN sports betting analyst Tyler Fulgham on Canty and Golic Jr. And Tyler, when you have big games like this, folks want to know the props or parlays that they need to get involved with. Do you have any leans in this particular matchup?
Yeah, Alabama wide receiver Jameson Williams. He is the other half of that duo with John Mechie. Of course, Mechie, who was able to play for a little bit of that SEC title game and played well, scored a touchdown, won't be available for this matchup. So Jameson Williams is the true alpha, the one of one in the Alabama passing attack. And I just have to think Georgia is going to play better, one, defensively, than they did all around. And I think now that they don't have to worry about Mechie for the entire 60 minutes, they will focus their defense on Jameson Williams, taking away that top target for Bryce Young. So I think he's going to see a lot of double teams, a lot of bracket coverage. I do expect Bill O'Brien to move him around the formations, shift him, you know, pre-snap to try and get matchups and one-on-one situations that he likes. But I do think it will be the intent of Georgia to limit the efficiency of Jameson Williams. So a prop that is 110.5, even for someone of Jameson Williams' talent and caliber, is just a little bit too high. He can still get 100 yards receiving. If he gets 100 yards receiving, that's a loser for this bet. So it's just the fact that this is too high. If it was in the upper 80s or lower 90s, I consider going over. But based on how I think Georgia's going to approach defending Jameson Williams, 110 is a little bit too high. He can still have a great game and go under. So I think under's the play there with Williams, despite the fact I think Alabama's offense will put a couple of points on the board and win this game.
ESPN sports betting analyst and radio host Tyler Fulgham joining Canty and Golic Jr. Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. So let's move on here, Tyler, to the NFL wild card. Cardinals-Rams, that'll happen next Monday night. The over is 50.5. How do you see this one?
Yeah, I'm excited, not only as a Rams fan, but as a member of the ESPN team that will have this game on our platforms, ESPN's MegaCast on Monday night for this matchup between the Rams and the Cardinals, the third time we'll see it this season. I do think the total is one we can attack going over. That would be my play, over 50.5. I think it's come down to 50 at some spots, so grab that if you can. But these two teams, if you look back to their two matchups this season, 57 total points in the first matchup at SoFi, 53 in the rematch in Scottsdale, Arizona. So I think the trend shows us these two teams will score points. We know Cliff Kingsbury and Sean McVay are two game callers and head coaches that like to push the pace. They like to generate more snaps, which generate more opportunities to put the ball in the air and put the ball in the end zone. So I expect this to be a higher scoring game over 50.5, no matter who wins it.
Tyler, the swan song for Ben Roethlisberger gets extended one more game. They're playing wild card weekend in Arrowhead against the Kansas City Chiefs. Is there a particular part of this matchup that you would isolate to find value?
Yeah, and it'd be the Pittsburgh offense. I know they just got into the postseason, guys, but they mustered just 16 points against a Baltimore defense that had not been good down the stretch. And they needed overtime to get those extra 3 points to get to 16. So I look at their team total for this rematch, because these two teams did play this regular season in Arrowhead. I look at Pittsburgh's team total. I'm going to play that under 16.5. When they met earlier this season, Kansas City won the game 36-10. And Kansas City's defense, I think, has been a little overrated. But where they really do excel is at home. And that makes sense. Canty, I don't know if you have. Correct me if I'm wrong, but if you've played at Arrowhead, if you've been an opposing player at Arrowhead Stadium, you know that is one of the loudest, most raucous environments in the entire NFL. And for opposing offenses to try and make checks at the line of scrimmage, communicate to the offensive linemen, to the wide receivers, it is very, very difficult to do in that loud and wild stadium. So you look at the trend of the Chiefs' defense, the last six games they played at home this season, they allowed a grand total of 62 points. That's 10 per game. And one of those victims, so to speak, was this Pittsburgh Steelers team that scored just 10 points when they lost to the Chiefs 36-10. So it's, I guess, great if you're a Steelers fan that you get at least one more opportunity to see Big Ben. But I don't think Big Ben and that Pittsburgh Steelers offense do a lot of scoring in this matchup with the Chiefs. So I'll play their team total under 16.5. Have you, Canty, been to Arrowhead for a game?
Absolutely. I've been to Arrowhead, and that's going to be a tough task for that Steelers offense that's already challenged. So you are spot on with that one, my man. Tyler, we appreciate a few moments. Appreciate you helping us get our listeners' pockets right ahead of the National Football Championship game and, of course, Wild Card Weekend. That is ESPN sports betting analyst Tyler Fulgham, the best in the business. Who will raise the trophy? Find out tonight. The College Football Playoff National Championship presented by AT&T. Coverage begins at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Listen, I don't know why the Giants are retaining Joe Judge, but hopefully our next guest can give us some insight on that. This is Canty and Golic Jr. with Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
And Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Canty here with Amber Wilson, who's filling in for Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Small business protection just got easier with more than 30 coverage options available. Progressive has you covered. More at progressivecommercial.com. And Amber, the former players for the New York Giants have let it be known that they're not happy about what's going on with the organization. I talked about the text message I just received from one of my former teammates yesterday, Michael Strahan, who is in the Ring of Honor for the New York Giants, had his jersey retired by the Giants organization, had this to say: the fans in New York are fed up. It's time for the Giants to reach outside of the norm and stop being as conservative as they've been in the past. The NFL is changing. They've got to change with it. And it's clear that they're going in a different direction with the general manager because Dave Gettleman has stepped down and retired. What's less clear is what's happening with their head coach, and it feels like the Giants are leaning toward retaining Coach Joe Judge moving forward. So your thoughts on that potential decision from the New York Football Giants?
Well, it seems like they're leaning towards it. I don't know if we're going to believe it, though. It feels like that we keep hearing that. We've heard it several times throughout the season, and then we've been hearing that today as well. Absent this potential meeting here between Judge and Mara, and maybe something changes, but we have heard numerous times they're going to retain Joe Judge. None of us are believing it, not just the former players. It's been hard for everybody to digest and anybody who cares about that organization, but it seems like ownership thus far has been committed to retaining Judge in that position.
Well, let's go out to the Goodyear hotline right now and bring in somebody that's in the know, ESPN New York Giants reporter Jordan Renan. And Jordan, we saw the report by Paul Schwartz of the New York Post that said that the Giants owner John Mara is meeting with Joe Judge right now and that there will be more to follow. Can you give us any insight as to the lean that John Mara and ownership has on retaining Joe Judge?
My opinion from speaking to people is that the expectation is that, again, this is really kind of the same as it has been for a while. They would like to bring back Joe Judge. They expect to bring back Joe Judge, right? But it's going to depend on, you know, what his plan is moving forward, who the new general manager they hire is, and then they're going to move from there. Because as they, you know, put out in their and has been made clear in their press release, is the hierarchy is going to be the general manager overseeing the head coach. So if you're going to have a general manager overseeing the head coach, how are you going to hire a new general manager and not leave any wiggle room there? So while they might want to keep Joe Judge, it's still going to be kind of in limbo and hanging there until they have this new general manager in place.
So what I'm hearing from you, Jordan, is this story ain't going away anytime soon, that we're still going to be talking about this for weeks or maybe months to come.
Yeah, but you know what? It's hard for me to see them once they do say, okay, you know, we would like to bring back Joe Judge, and then they go and they bring in a new GM. That new GM at that point almost is going to be like, all right, at this point, it's, you know, they already passed the prime hiring period for coaches. He's probably going to be like, well, okay, you know, worst case scenario, we bring him back. We have him for 1 year. We do an evaluation period with everybody. And then you could fire him after the year, which is essentially what Denver just did, right? George Payton became the GM. He inherited Vic Fangio. And what happened after 1 year? He bringing in his own guy. So I think that appears the most likely route that we're headed right now.
Jordan, what are some of the names that the Giants are going to be looking at to fill their general manager vacancy?
They're going to look outside the organization strongly. I mean, I know a lot of people have sit there and said Kevin Abrams was the assistant general manager there now with the Giants. You know, they're just going to give him the job. I don't get that sense, and I've been saying this now for weeks with that GM opening. Ryan Poles is a very strong name that I hear. He's a executive in Kansas City. Joe Shane He's the assistant GM in Buffalo. These are some of the names I expect to be in the mix. Monty Ostenfurt, who's in Tennessee. Dave Ziegler, who's in New England. Those two guys have ties to Joe Judge. We'll see how much that ends up playing into the equation. Maybe it did, maybe had a little bit more to factor into the equation than it does, you know, 2 weeks ago than it does now. But those are some of the guys that I think you should expect to be in the mix for this general manager job. And what I think Giant fans are most excited about is it's outside their comfort zone, right? You brought up Michael Strahan before, and he said they need to, you know, go outside their comfort zone. They need to get away from the, you know, think differently. And I think you're seeing at least a willingness to do that with the GM search. And also, as much as, you know, everybody sits there and pounds on Joe Judge now, that was a little bit out of their comfort zone, even though he's a Belichick guy. He was a little bit out of their comfort zone, think about it, when they did hire him, right? So I think you're getting the Giants organization realizing that they still need more changes, even though they've made some already.
ESPN New York Giants reporter Jordan Renan on with us. Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. Jordan, quickly here, how much does a decision about Joe Judge rely on Daniel Jones? Like, how linked are those decisions?
I don't think they're linked very much at all. I think, again, new general manager, that'll be an option if he wants to, you know, he comes up and says, we need Russell Wilson, and that's the decision he wants to make, he'll go for it. Aside from that, it just makes sense to bring back Daniel Jones, even if he's not your starter. I mean, he's still on his rookie deal and he's cheap. So the only scenario where it really makes sense, even if you draft somebody, it makes sense to bring Daniel Jones back. The only scenario really doesn't make sense for them to bring back Daniel Jones is if they go out and get a big-time quarterback, you know, via trade or whatever. So I don't think those two are really they don't go hand-in-hand, in my opinion.
Jordan, we appreciate a few moments of your time. I'm sure we'll have you back on the show very soon to talk about the Giants GM search and what they do with head coach Joe Judge. Jordan, appreciate it, my man.
All right, Chris, cheer up. It'll get better sometime this century.
Well, there's no place to go what up right now because the Giants are at rock bottom. That is ESPN New York. That is ESPN New York Giants reporter Jordan Renan giving us the latest on the state of the franchise. Coming up next, how is this matchup versus Kirby Smart's Georgia team different for Alabama than in years past? We'll have that. But first, a word from Wendy's. Every day is game day at Wendy's. The game? Choosing a better breakfast. And it's easy to win at Wendy's with heavy hitters on the roster like sausage, egg, and Swiss croissant and the bacon, egg, and Swiss croissant, which is my favorite. So if you're looking to score with the best breakfast in the game, it's got to be Wendy's breakfast, the official breakfast of the NCAA. Choose wisely. Choose Wendy's. Available at participating U.S. stores. Wendy's during breakfast hours only. This is Canty and Golic Jr. with Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Canty here with Amber Wilson, who's filling in for Mike Golic Jr. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Who will raise the trophy? Find out tonight. The College Football Playoff National Championship presented by AT&T. Coverage begins at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. And for more on that game, we got to go to the Goodyear Hotline to bring on ESPN College Football sideline reporter and co-host of Freddie and Fitzsimmons, Ian Fitzsimmons. Ian is a part of ESPN's radio coverage for the College Football Championship with Sean McDonough and Todd Blackledge on the call. And Ian, Lucas Oil Stadium, I'm very familiar with it. That's where I won my Super Bowl with the New York Giants. But I want you to help us set the scene for the national championship game between Alabama and Georgia. What's the atmosphere like there today?
Well, CC, it's always good to talk to you, my brother. It's been too long. Amber, I hope you're well. Happy New Year. It's been medieval, man. I mean, these two fan bases, Bubba, they travel and they spend money. I mean, it's been cannibalistic around here. I went to Kilroy's for lunch yesterday, this little sports bar about maybe, you know, half a mile from our hotel, and it was full at 11:30. I mean, jam-packed with Alabama and Georgia fans. The entire city has been overrun with Georgia and Alabama fans. And everyone was wondering how these two SEC fan bases going to handle, you know, 14 degrees and whatnot. Man, they're so hammered, they can't feel their faces anyway. So it's been absolutely medieval. And look, man, when it comes to the game, get ready. This is your kind of game, CC, because, you know, the Alabama's right side of the line a little bit banged up with Emil Ekior at right guard. You know, he's dealing with a shoulder issue. Chris Owens, right tackle, is dealing with an ankle. And I know you, man, if you had a shot and knew that, hey, what shoulder is it? Which ankle is it? I know what you're doing as a defensive lineman. And that Georgia front, they're angry. They're hacked off. They were embarrassed as to what happened in the SEC championship. These are two teams, and Alabama is still playing the undercard role. So, look, dude, it's going to be good old-fashioned Keith Jackson on the broadcast type paint-swapping, hard-hitting SEC football tonight.
I can't hit you with the Super Bowl flex that Chris just hit you with, Ian. But I can ask you about the game.
He does that, Amber. He does that. Get used to it. He does that.
I wish I could. Hey, if I had one, I'd do it too, over and over again. So you mentioned there that Georgia was embarrassed by their performance. And Alabama's O-line, of course, put up the best performance of their entire season in that SEC championship game against that Georgia pass rush. Do you think that that was an anomaly, or are they going to be able to emulate that again?
Well, I think that Bill O'Brien and Alabama's offensive coordinator had an exceptional game plan coming into that game, Amber. And Chris will tell you, you know, Alabama runs a lot of RPO, a ton. And in that game, they really didn't. It was more, they kept their backs in and ran more pass pro. It was more of a traditional, you know, hey, just get it in Bryce's hand, Bryce Young, their Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, and turn it loose and get it out of his hands. You know, and then Alabama came back against Cincinnati and didn't ask Bryce Young to be, you know, play hero ball. It was, you know what, Cincinnati's going to play that monster back 3-3-5 defense. Guess what? We're going to run Brian Robinson right down your throat, and it's not Derrick Henry. You know, it's not Trent Richardson. It's not Mark Ingram. It's not Johnny Musso or, you know, Major Ogilvy or Bobby Humphrey that has the bowl record now for rushing yards in a single bowl game. It's Brian Robinson with 204 in the Cotton Bowl. I mean, it was a remarkable game plan both ways. You know, they've now shown you they can beat you throwing it like they did against Georgia, or if you're going to play back, they're going to run it right down your throat, which was remarkably impressive. But in that game, Amber, Bill O'Brien came in and did something we hadn't really seen all year. There was more pass pro traditional offense than RPO. And it caught Georgia by surprise and lit them up. And let me tell you, I'm on the Alabama side, but Chris Budden is on the Georgia side for us. That Georgia bunch talking to her, you know, they are jaw locked, wearing enamel off their teeth because they were that embarrassed. And Chris, you played, man. You're down in the trenches. You know how Jordan Davis and Carter and Kobe Dean and all those dudes in that front seven, they want to prove that this was an anomaly, that SEC title game. They never got to Bryce Young, not one time. So tonight, I expect Georgia to come hell-bent, and in Alabama, still playing that underdog role, which, look, Nick Saban's been able to play that three times in his career. Three. That's it. So to be able to play that card again, get ready. You got two teams coming in tonight that are going to be, they don't like each other, they can't stand each other, and they both have something to prove.
Talking with ESPN college football sideline reporter and co-host of Freddie and Fitzsimmons, Ian Fitzsimmons. And Ian, you're absolutely right. If those three defensive tackles from Georgia, Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, and Devontae Wyatt can't put their stamp on this game,
What would you be like coming into this game?
Exactly. I've got to be aggressive. You're going to be aggressive. You're trying to get upfield because Bryce Young set an SEC championship game record against what was supposed to be one of the best units defensively that we had seen in college football history. But I got to ask you, the focus of that defense might be a little bit different. No John Metchie III in this game. You got to think that secondary from Georgia is going to be locking in on Jameson Williams. How big of an absence is it going to be for that Alabama Crimson Tide offense without John Metchie III?
Great point. And you notice it against Cincinnati. Now, Cincinnati, I talked to one NFL scout, CC, and he said Cincinnati has the best tandem of corners in all of college football. And Kobe Bryant on one side, the Jim Thorpe Award winner and a first-round draft pick coming up in the draft in a few months, and Sauce Gardner on the other side. So what does Alabama do? They didn't test him. They moved Jameson Williams around a bit, but they went with full-on, just we're going to run right at you and then attack the middle of the field with guys like Slade Bolden, number 18, and Ja'Cory Brooks, true freshman, number 7, who's the next guy. That's the next Alabama star wide receiver. When I was there for A-Day, you know, back in April, everybody was telling me Ja'Cory Brooks is the next big name coming out at wide receiver for Alabama. So, and Brooks had a great game against Cincinnati. So how do they replace Mechie? To your point, it's going to be Brooks and Bolden. It will have to be by committee. But Mechie, man, he and Jameson Williams are thicker than thieves. They are true brothers. And Jameson Williams told me earlier this week, man, I'm carrying Mechie out there with me on my pads. So they all feel it. They feel his loss, but they're going to have to overcome it by committee. And also just toting the rock, man, just running it right, try and run it at Georgia.
Yeah, I remember once upon a time in the national championship game between Bama and Georgia, there were some young players, some young receivers that stepped up, including Devonta Smith, Heisman Trophy winner. So maybe history has a chance of repeating itself tonight.
Look, hey, remember, Najee Harris, nobody had ever heard of him. He came in the second half and led the team in rushing in a half. Some kid named Tua came in at halftime. You mentioned Devonta Smith with the game-winning touchdown. Yeah, Bama just keep bringing them all in. And look, Ja'Cory Brooks could be that next freshman that has, you know, this that big moment on a grand stage known as a natty. I mean, I'm pumped, dude. And again, I think this is a low-scoring game, Chris. You would love to play in this game. Amber, you might need to control him after this because this is going to be an old-school paint-swapping, you know, passion-behind-your-pads type football game.
I love it, Ian. Enjoy the call on the game. We're looking forward to it. Appreciate a few moments to try to set the scene for us before the national championship game tonight.
Always, my man. Be well, Amber. Keep him under line. I mean, look, I know it's a tall task. Keep him under wraps, okay?
I'll do my best.
That's ESPN college football sideline reporter Ian Fitzsimmons trying to get us set up for the national championship game between Bama and Georgia. And Amber, I'm with Ian on this one. I'm looking forward to it. These are two teams that love a physical brand of ball, and I think it's going to make for an exciting national championship game tonight. Coming up next, should Carson Wentz be the quarterback in Indy moving forward? We'll have the answer for you. Chris Canty with Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr., Canty and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Canty with Amber Wilson, who's filling in for Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear hotline. Hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter line at ChrisCandy99, at AmberW790. And Amber, yesterday we had a lot of strange games going on. I think we had three games that went into overtime. We also had what a lot of people would say might be the biggest regular season finale collapse that we've seen from a playoff contending team in recent memories. That's right. I'm talking about the Indianapolis Colts going down to Jacksonville and laying an egg against the Jaguars, a team that was poised to have the number one overall pick in the 2022 NFL draft. The Colts were favored by 16 points going up to kickoff yesterday's game and got boat raced by the Jags. I can't say I told you so, but I do have to run a clip back from Friday's show. Let's listen into what I had to say about Carson Wentz going into this game. Watching what happened and how they got embarrassed last weekend against the New England Patriots, there's no way that the Jacksonville Jaguars allow that to happen again. And I know it sounds crazy because we're talking about a two-win team, but these guys, for them, this is their Super Bowl. They're riding off into the offseason, and a lot of those guys are trying to make their case that they belong in the NFL. I think you get a spirited effort from them. So I'm rolling with the underdogs in this one. And guess what? I'm an anarchist. I'll admit it. I know that I've always been skeptical of Carson Wentz. So I would love nothing more than for the Jaguars to be able to pull off the upset. The fact that they're getting 15 and a half points, of course I'm going with Jacksonville. You already knew that. Amber, that's good, clean living when you can predict it like that, isn't it?
I mean, that was good, clean living. You hedged it a little bit by throwing the point spread in there. But you definitely get credit for calling this one. I was on air on our airwaves on Saturday night with Q Myers. He kept mentioning to me on game night that we were hosting that the Colts, they always lose to the Jags. And so don't sleep on that. And he was right as well, because death taxes and the Colts losing to the Jags. But I do think it brings up an interesting conversation about Carson Wentz, because I think what we know now at this point with the sample size that we have is that whole 2017 MVP run, that was an anomaly. Like, that's not the real Carson Wentz. And although he might be a serviceable quarterback, he's not that guy, and he's not going to be that guy ever again.
Yeah, I remember Carson Wentz from the 2019 season. After they lost out in Miami, they were drawn dead at 5-7, and he was able to reel off, I think, four wins at the end of the season, in order to get them into the postseason. So I've seen Carson Wentz elevate the play of people around him, but the question was, is Carson Wentz that's going to show up in Indy closer to what we saw in 2019 and 2017, or is it going to be more of what we saw in 2020 when he led the NFL in interceptions and only played in 12 games? And I think we got our answer yesterday. Carson Wentz is a quarterback that you can't consistently rely on in big spots. And I think that's the trouble that Frank Wright and Chris Ballard are going to find themselves in, because they've essentially hitched their wagon to this guy. They traded a first-round draft pick to the Philadelphia Eagles to acquire him, and they gave him a contract extension. And right now, it's looking like you threw good money after bad in the production that you're getting from Carson Wentz. In a win-and-in scenario, Amber, the last couple of weeks, win-and-in scenarios for the Colts, Carson Wentz has come up incredibly small. His QBR the last couple of weeks, he had a QBR of 28.7, in their game against the Las Vegas Raiders, and a QBR of 4.4 against the Jacksonville Jaguars. By any standards, that's not good enough from a quarterback that you've invested an awful lot in.
When you start laughing when you look at his QBR rating for the last few games, that's not ever good news. Yeah, I kind of think the Carson Wentz situation, it reminds me a little bit of what's happened with Baker Mayfield in Cleveland, right? Where we're talking about a couple quarterbacks that have really been disappointing and continued to get disappointing down the stretch of the season, and did battle injuries. Obviously, Wentz with the foot surgery, that he had COVID multiple times, so he missed a lot of practice at different points during the season. How does that play into this? Does that make that more difficult to evaluate him? But unlike the situation with Baker Mayfield, in Indianapolis, they would save a lot of money if they were to get rid of Carson Wentz. Like, if they were to just cut him, they would actually save significant money because they owe him $15 million guaranteed on the remainder of that four-year monster deal that he'd signed with the Eagles. And so they do save money if they were to move on. I think they'd instantly save $13.3 million if they were to just, say, release him. Of course, the more probable scenario might be trying to trade him. But what's the market now for Carson Wentz? Like, is a Denver Broncos team or a Steelers or a Panthers team interested still in Carson Wentz? Is he still as attractive as a trade piece as he once was?
I don't know. That question remains to be answered, and I think that we're going to have more insight on that this offseason. But Amber, we got to play this cut from our resident Carson Wentz apologist, ESPN football analyst Dan Orlovsky on KJM this morning about Carson Wentz's Week 18 performance.
Carson Wentz was brought there to win games or be the reason they won that kind of game, and he wasn't. They didn't lose because of Carson, but they didn't win because of Carson. And I think that's the most disappointing part. And I don't say this stuff like on television. I think you guys know me by now just to get a rise out of people. Like, I honestly believe that he was going to be a difference maker for them this year. And I think that he was good this year. I don't think he was great for them.
The Jaguars were making moves, keeping the Colts out of the playoffs yesterday.
Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports.
And Amber, I think that's the biggest thing, the point that Dan Orlovsky just made, because this Colts team a year ago, with largely the same core of players in place, with an over-the-hill Phillip Rivers, found a way to be able to get into the wild card picture and came a goal-to-goal series away from being able to upset the Buffalo Bills. So that has to be the big shocker for Frank Reich and Chris Ballard, that they can't at least get back to that same point with Carson Wentz.
Well, and I think we're talking about a Colts team with more Pro Bowlers on it than any other team right now in the NFL, certainly a talent-packed team. I think the question when you're talking about Carson Wentz is, where do you go? Like, is there a feasible upgrade from Wentz, even what we saw from Wentz this season? It's not an easy answer. And obviously, I mentioned that contract, not easy either.
All right. Yeah. I mean, it's got to be really interesting to see what the Indianapolis Colts do with their quarterback position this offseason and whether or not they stay with Carson Wentz. But coming up, we got Mike Golic Jr. joining us live from Indy with the preview of the college football playoff championship against Alabama and Georgia. Gojo coming up next.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.